You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Hello and welcome to Real Living. This is Lavinia Spirito with Mary Lou Nemecek, and we are going to signal to you a column from the Bishop of Lincoln, Nebraska, which I posted on our Catholic Way Bible Study Facebook page a couple of weeks ago that I thought was truly, it kind of addressed, I think, a lot of the distress that I think many of us are experiencing due to the incivility of our age, to the just plain rudeness and disregard for any kind of
conversation,
civil
difference
discourse,
of opinions.
You know, airing out differences of opinions in a civilized fashion, which means allowing other people to express their, you know, it's funny. I saw a cartoon. I don't know if you saw it too. I saw it. I don't know where we see so many things. It has to do with noise.
Right.
I saw this cartoon about two guys speaking, and one of them is starting to say, one guy says, how do you feel about same-sex marriage? And the other guy says, well, I'm kind of against it for the bigot. And the guy doesn't even let him finish.
Oh,
and there's like bigot in big, mm-hmm. huge letters. Mm-hmm. And so the guy says, well, but I thought we were having a conversation. Bigot! You know, the guy mm-hmm. keeps yelling over mm-hmm. him, like mm-hmm. in the cartoon, big, huge black letters. And then finally he says, well, I just thought you were asking me and I was going to get bigot. And then finally the guy whips out a dictionary on his phone and he says, actually, the definition of a bigot is somebody who won't let the other side explain themselves. It was pretty funny.
I think I'm going to look that up and keep that handy.
Two little skinny guys
exactly.
talking. Oh, it was so funny. And that's kind of what we've got to. It's like if you don't have the right point of view, not only do you not get to express your point of view and the reasons underlying, and you have a civilized discourse, a rational discourse, as Thomas would say, unless you're on, you know, you believe in all the things according to the party line, you will be shouted down.
Exactly.
Again, I was reading somebody or hearing somebody was interviewed on the radio, and they said that he was doing a March for Life, but one of the ones like on the other coast, like mm-hmm. in California, where people were on the other side. So abortion advocates were standing on the other side with whistles and kettle drums and basically trying to drown out
mm-hmm.
the noise. And this lady said one of the first signs of National Socialism in Germany was people going around with whistles and kettle drums drowning out the opposition for the Nazi philosophy.
Oh, that's very scary.
So, you know, it's like, and it wouldn't just be applied to National Socialism. It would probably apply to any kind of totalitarian ethos. Of course, you know, today we don't believe we live in a totalitarian society. We don't. We live in a democracy, in a representative, in a Republican democracy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the bishop here has kind of put his finger on the phenomena of incivility and of just shouting the opposition down without wanting to hear reason.
Because the column is called The Age of Noise.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we can all agree that certainly pertains to what's going on today.
He quotes Aldous Huxley, who wrote, remember, Brave New World.
Mm-hmm.
And Aldous Huxley spoke about the age of noise 70 years ago, just referring to the radio. Imagine what he would think about it now, right? And he says, news items, mutually irrelevant bits of information, blasts of corybantic or sentimental music, continually repeated doses of drama that bring no catharsis. You know, according to the Greeks, you attended a drama or a tragedy so that there would be a cathartic resolution at the end and you would leave feeling all right. You mm-hmm. know, you would feel like there'd been resolution. But he's right. The way that the world presents itself to us on the radio, on the television, on the internet, on social media, is oftentimes a series of problems without any solution.
Well, he's quoted saying it penetrates the mind, filling it with a babble of distractions. And when I think about babble, what happened there?
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't understand each other.
Mm-hmm.
And they were babbling. I mean, it's a word that we're all familiar with today, and that's certainly what's going on in the discussions in the town squares, on the radio. every place these days.
We are today, as he says, awash in information, assaulted often with tweets and pundits analyzing the latest crisis in Washington or difficulty in the church. I like how he put that in there because it's not just political.
No.
It's also, could you believe what so-and-so did? Or can you believe what the Holy Father did? Or can you believe what Bishop so-and-so did? You know, it's like it's always a crisis and there's never any resolution.
And it reminds me of, I read it on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you read it on the internet,
it must
be true.
Right. So we have, obviously, so he addresses the responsibility that we have as Christians to be engaged in the public square, to be engaged in the political process, but not to trust in the political process to resolve all the problems. You know, and that's, I've been researching the subject of heaven and hope for the Hebrews Bible study that we're doing now at Catholic Way Bible Study. And I love the definition of hope of heaven versus relying on the political process. You can rely on the political process. You can be an engaged Catholic. You can engage in the public square. You can do all those things. But then you have to have, you must understand that deliverance and freedom and heaven are not going to come through the political process, because it's incomplete, that you have to have some realistic expectations of how to expect things to happen. And you can't put all your eggs in the political basket, which a lot of people do. It's all about political ideology and how things can be solved through government.
Well, people are identified by their affiliations or organizations that they belong to, and you just kind of pigeonhole them. And that's where they stay. You're not open to any change or any discussion these days to hear the other side even.
Right. And so and he says, but actually, as Christians, our hope is in heaven. And the hope of heaven means that God is in charge of the future, not the government, that the political process or the latest intellectual piece or op-ed that you may have read somewhere or somebody's latest book might be helpful in helping you to form a framework of how to believe in things. But really, our hope should not be in this world, in the political system, in the social engineering or whatever it is that you believe in. Our hope should be that God has history solidly in his hands, that he has the outcome of history. So I think that's the true nature of hope.
It is.
It's not hoping, cross your heart, hope to die, you know, cross your heart, hope to die, sort of, you know,
stick
wishful,
a needle in my eye.
Stick a needle in my eye, right? It's not wishful thinking. It's the belief, the trust that God is in charge. And that even at times when things seem dark or confusing, I don't know about you, but I'm pretty confused nowadays. By most every news item I see, both as the bishop astutely observes, both on the political side, but also on church affairs side, because you get so many contradictory bits of information and you just don't really know what to do with them.
Well, you know, we were talking earlier and I said, you know, I really discovered prudence when we did another show. And I thought that it really applied to what's going on today. And it's one of the cardinal virtues. And prudence is a virtue that disposes practical reason to discern our true good in every circumstance and to choose the right means of achieving it. So it's really right reason and action is what St. Thomas Aquinas said. And it's to have that conscience to be able to discern, to be able to choose what's good. You know, it's like the foundation. And it was so helpful to me when I was listening to all these different things going on during the election and knowing people that I disagreed with from strictly a faith point of view, both of us being the same faith, but coming from two different directions, supporting different candidates, different stances and all of that. And it gave me some peace because, you know, I was hoping that I was looking at things through the virtue of prudence and I could accept the fact that perhaps they weren't, you know, that I wasn't going to be angry with them because if they're not there and they can't use that guide because it's really, it guides the judgment of conscience is what it says in the catechism. So I have to look at that person and think maybe they're not equipped at this moment in time to be able to do that. And that really brought me from this high level of anger and frustration to some peace.
Well, that's mercy.
Yes, exactly.
Absolutely, right? So, and I thought this was good, too. I mean, you know, obviously, before and after presidential elections and big, big political stuff, we tend to watch the news. I don't know about you, but I tend to watch more of the news when usually I try to give the news a wide berth because most of our news is so ideologically filtered from one end or the other. Even if it's filtered from the maybe from the point of view that I would agree with, I somehow have a feeling I'm not getting the whole story. Exactly. You know, exactly. I want to have the whole story and then I want to draw my own conclusions.
Or give me the truth. Just give me the truth.
Yeah. But see, what is the truth in today's news?
It's all relative.
You know, it's all relative. It's all like right. A good thing if so-and-so is reporting it. And it's a bad thing if the opposite ideologically driven news organization is reporting it to you.
That's the
problem. You can't trust what's going on because all the news is heavily, heavily editorialized. I like it too. This particular, the tyranny of the immediate. Like, remember when CNN first broke through as the only cable net news show and they had to fill, all of a sudden they had to go from nightly news or maybe even noon and nightly news to 24/7.
Exactly.
So they had huge news cycles that all of a sudden all the space that had to be filled. And so they're the ones really that I think were credited with the idea of having breaking news headlines ticker taping underneath all the pieces and taking the same story and repeating it at the top of every hour, even if there was no new news or new information on that story.
And all they knew was the headline, but they didn't know anything else about it in order to really speak.
And so the anchor at the top of the hour would say, breaking news. And so you're like, and then you're thinking, oh, really? There's been a breakthrough. And then, no, it's the same story I heard 7 hours ago, you know, when I tuned in the first time. And they obviously don't have any news, but they have to kind of keep this tyranny of the immediate going, which is, I think, is so beautifully the way this bishop has put this. It's a tyranny of the immediate that expects our immediate reaction, even though we might not have all the facts.
Exactly.
Even though we may not have all the information. So, I mean, that's very interesting in how we need to react to the immediacy of the news cycle. And just remember that God is in his heaven. We have hope and we need to use the virtue of prudence in examining this information. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Hello, welcome back to Real Living. We're discussing Bishop in Nebraska. Now, you know, I keep calling him a bishop in Nebraska. Do we have a name for this guy?
I don't have his name here.
He's great.
But this is his column. It's called the Bishop's Column.
The Bishop's Column, and it's out of the Lincoln Diocese in Nebraska. And I thought it was really cool, obviously, because we've devoted a whole show to it. And he has to do with the idea of noise, of our 24/7 entertainment cycle, of the noise cycle, of the so-called fake news, which I hate even to use that word, that qualifier, because it's in the news so much now. And it means, you know, along with a lot of other terms, all of a sudden fake news means something completely different than what we maybe thought of at the beginning. You know, it has these very charged meanings. He says, we are living in a moment where argument precedes analysis. And outrage or feigned outrage has become an ordinary kind of virtue signaling in a way, a conveying of the right responses to social issues in order to boost our social standing. So, therefore, what comes to mind is that, remember that poor kid who was gay, what was his name, Matthew somebody, who was murdered somewhere in the heartland. I forgot what. It was about 15 years ago, and he was kind of like the fence.
He was tied to a fence.
Tied to
something.
A fence. It's just
yes,
horrible.
I remember, it was horrible.
Poor boy. And he happened to be gay. And so he became like sort of a martyr saint of the whole, you know, gay lobby cause because he happened to be gay. Well, basically it was said that he had been tied to the fence because of homophobia. But actually what came out fairly early in the process was that it was a drug deal gone wrong, that he had short shrifted the wrong people and the wrong people tied to him to a fence and killed him. But not because he was gay, but because he was involved in a drug deal. But that information kind of filtered out 15 years later, kind of as a throwaway sentence.
Because it didn't work into their dialogue.
Exactly. So that's what I think he's talking about as outrage or feigned outrage has become an ordinary. So basically you see a story and you want to put it in a certain kind of optic. If it lends itself at all to what your political agenda or ideological agenda is.
What he, exactly what he said, the right response to social issues. Mm-hmm. It didn't fit their agenda.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I like the way he says argument precedes analysis, which is true. And you have these news stories that come out, and then within 5 minutes, they have a talking head from some university or think tank, and he or she is spouting all this information. But really what they're doing is they're just regurgitating talking points that they have in their data banks for a situation such as this.
Well, that's what we see every night. There's certain networks that there are keywords that every single one of them uses. And then you'll go over to the other side and they won't be using those words at all.
And they use the other words.
They'll use other ones.
A classic example is how the media, the secular media reports things like the March for Life. You immediately know if you are if this is a news story from a secular press because they will refer to the march as an anti-abortion march. But if you go to the media that's a bit more friendly to the pro-life agenda, then they'll call it the March for Life.
Right.
But if it's in the New York Times, it's an anti-abortion march. It's mm-hmm. not called the March mm-hmm. for Life. Mm-hmm. So you have already a filtering of language that occurs even before the story is told.
I know.
It's like this subliminal cues. And so like the whole idea of reproductive choice, you know, reproductive choice has nothing to do with reproduction or choice.
That's exactly right.
Right?
That's right.
At least for the baby.
The words.
Right. So, I mean, so we have these kind of semantics. It's basically it's a game of linguistics of how certain labels and certain words have assumed certain incredibly emotionally charged meaning, which really has no bearing with what the language, the word meant in the original
language.
The
meaning of it.
Exactly. So, and then he refers, of course, to the presidential election, because, I mean, how are we ever going to get away from that, from all of that, right? Because it was so acrimonious and so polemical and polarizing and mm-hmm. and it's just rather distressing. And I think that's, he says, it's true. The age of noise diminishes virtue and charity and imagination and replaces them with anxiety and worry and exhaustion. I mean, think about 1 Corinthians 13. Love always believes the best, mm-hmm. is always patient. Love is never rude. You know, how? I mean, it distresses me when I see it in the secular media, but I have to say it distresses me as well when I see so-called Catholic journalists, for instance, jumping on each other's toes on the air, cutting off people who have a contrary point of view. And I've seen that. And I've seen that on major sort of Catholic networks or conservative networks. And that's not right either. Because if we're supposed to be salt and light, how in the world are we going to evangelize somebody if we just slaughtered them on the air in a partisan fashion?
You're exactly right. And that's why he's saying that it diminishes virtue. And I would go back to the virtues of, mm-hmm. of the cardinal virtues of prudence, justice, fortitude, and temperance. Mm-hmm. We need to go back and reread those and look those up and start gaining some peace through those mm-hmm. instead of getting so worked up, as he says, where we're going to be full of anxiety, worry. And I can tell you that I think everybody I know is totally exhausted with the dialogue mm-hmm. that goes on in the media.
Everything's a crisis, especially now. Of course, the media isn't geared to like the new incoming more conservative administration. And so everything that happened pretty seamlessly under the prior more progressive liberal administration, identical things have happened that happened under President Obama are now happening under this new president. And for some reason, it wasn't a problem under Obama, but now right. it's this huge problem under him.
You know? The words that are being used, one that was used yesterday referring to the president is unhinged.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've never heard words like that.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just, he was stating what he believes, his mm-hmm. positions.
Mm-hmm.
So they're saying, then he is unhinged.
You know, I don't know about you, but I'm pretty frustrated because I don't think I'm getting the whole, I mean, obviously we're not getting the whole story on either end. And I don't think we're getting not even a fake complete picture of what's going on. Because even though I might agree with certain positions like pro-life position and freedom of conscience and appointing the right justices to the Supreme Court and all that stuff, still I find a lot to be distressed mm-hmm. From things that are coming out of the new administration. So I think the people of faith, like us, shouldn't be aligned just with one party or the other.
No.
We're aligned. We need to remember that we're Catholics.
Well, we're aligned with the truth and how that permeates in society. Mm-hmm. And the positions that either party take are politicians or the laws, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I mean, that should be our mm-hmm. focal point always, and it should come from that. Mm-hmm. And we get caught up with all the rhetoric, mm-hmm. and it's difficult not to.
Let me help our listeners out here. I just thought I didn't want to name names, but I think I'm going to, because I think that sometimes there's so much information out there. I have some go-to people that I help, that help me filter through the noise, that I know that I can rely upon them for a fairly unbiased position. Al Cresta is one of them. Al mm-hmm. Cresta has a radio show on mm-hmm. Ave Maria Radio. I would really recommend going there because he's very dispassionate. I mean, he takes a couple steps back and he examines both issues and he gives due credit where credit is due. I mean, you know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? It's mm-hmm. not a partisan examination. It is a more objective examination. George Weigel, who is
yes.
a senior fellow at the Center for Public Policy and Ethics and Public Policy in Washington, D.C. Also, Robbie George. Professor mm-hmm. George, professor of jurisprudence at Princeton. Those are all people who I think I can rely upon to filter the ridiculousness out of things and to kind of tell me if there is something to be concerned about. Not that I'm going to absorb everything that they say unquestioningly or uncritically, but I do think that there are people that you need to trust who have a track record, who can go back and can, if you have a question, if you have a problem with certain mm-hmm. issues, they can just at least clarify them for you, because it really, an objective, cogent, well thought out analysis is missing on almost every
exactly.
news outlet or analysis outlet that I can think of.
Oh, I totally agree. And we do need to really take it upon ourselves as our own responsibility mm-hmm. to seek this out.
Mm-hmm.
We can't just be a sponge that absorbs all of this and not know how to process it.
We cannot be partisans, I suppose. You know what the Greek word for partisan is?
What?
Heretic. Hieresis from Greek means partisan. Partisans are taking factions. So there's something in there.
There's truth in that, isn't
don't
there?
Don't be too partisan. Remember that if we're going to be partisan at all, we're going to be partisan for the kingdom of God, you know? And that's where he segues so beautifully. The Lord didn't make us for this kind of noise. He made us for conversation, for exchange and communion, which is why we are so distressed when we hear that kind of stuff, right?
Exactly.
When we hear that kind of confrontation and that acrimony. The Lord made us for silence, for contemplation, for quietude. He also made us for real deliberation, for serious debate and activism over serious subjects. But without silence, contemplation, and quiet anchoring our lives in our hearts, the age of noise will transform us into uncharitably intemperate individuals, like everybody else. The way
this is why we're doing this show, because that's what we're seeing.
The age of noise is grinding away at our souls. And then he quotes, of course, the letter to Diognetus, which is really one of my go-to letters. It's in the second century AD, and it basically describes the stance of Christians in the late Roman Empire and how they are citizens of heaven. They have that hope of heaven. And that is not just for the Christians of the second century. It's for us today.
That's what we strive for.
By the hope of heaven, this whole immigration debate, I'm having a great time when I talk about Hebrews, because Hebrews says we are citizens of heaven. And I say, guess what? We're all here on temporary permits. We're all illegal aliens. All
right.
Christians are maybe documented immigrants. We may have our papers in order, but we're not staying here.
This is not our home.
We belong somewhere else.
Right.
We are trying to work in the vineyard. But the vineyard is on some other, the vineyard is in enemy territory. You know,
exactly.
The prince of this world is the president of this nation. But we belong to the kingdom, and the king of heaven is our sovereign. And so those are, I suppose, hopefully some good words. We must be detached from the noise of this world. We must participate fully in cultural, political, and public life. But we must entrust the outcome of our participation to the Lord. Amen.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.